From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 1-800-462-7413. Along with your call, some topics to talk over. Tell us, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about telemedicine, what the newest thing about it is, whether it's good care, bad care, should you get it from your doctor? And we're going to talk about the FDA. They're going to weigh in on the word natural, not organic, the word natural. What is natural, and then what is unnatural food? Yeah. We know a Twinkie is definitely unnatural food, no doubt, but we don't know what natural is. The FDA is going to tell us.
Recipe has some natural food.
Mediterranean portobello burgers. Let me tell you, portobellos definitely define the word natural. Mediterranean, come on, the king of diets.
Yeah.
And a burger, hits me in my heart. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. We have some of your emails and our medical myth buster later. But right now, Zorba, let's get to the phones. A listener in Duluth, Minnesota starts us off. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I called because I'm a mother of a son, and as of 3 days ago, a new baby girl.
Ooh, congratulations.
Yeah, and I've talked to other mothers about caring for a baby girl versus a baby boy. And along these lines, up came this kind of debate about a lawsuit from Johnson & Johnson on talcum powder or baby powder and its associations with ovarian cancer. And I was wondering, if you knew kind of the basis of that lawsuit, or if, you know, what are the risks associated with using baby powders and, you know, using it on a newborn baby girl?
I have a question. Oh, you mean because it's a baby girl, using talcum powder may produce ovarian cancer later on? Oh, I see.
Well,
I've got it. That's what your fear is?
Well, there's different chemicals in baby powders, but at least what I was using, it says it's all cornstarch. So I was just wondering if you had any more information about it.
Cornstarch is the default, if anyone is ever concerned, and talcum. Actually, cornstarch is safe. It's been proven safe. It's natural. It's as natural as you can get, and it's a safer thing. Talc has some issues involved with it that are not ovarian cancer, but some questionable issues years ago about talcum with pneumonia and lung infections. And so for children, cornstarch is really a very, very safe thing. So first of all, let's talk about those links and those things that you see. You know, when you look at a Google search, the links at the top are, of course, ads, and they're advertising, you know, from law firms that want you to join a suit because you had ovarian cancer and your mother was a good mother, but she used talcum powder or Johnson's baby powder, and let's make you $1 million. That's the top. Those are the advertised links. And then there are the people who are really religious, the religious links. You know, I'm against talcum powder. I'm for talcum, or political links. You know, I'm pro-talcum. I'm anti-talcum. Pro-baby powder, I'm anti-baby powder. And you know how easy it is to make a website. Or if you don't, it's, you know, it's $100 a year, and I can put up a website that says anything. And if a lot of people point to that website and gets a lot of searches, then it'll get more searches. So looking at it logically and scientifically, that's where the issue comes in. And as a mom, you want to protect your child. And sometimes things come up in alternative literature and websites that are not proven scientifically, but they're spot on. You know, they make their spot on. I think the ovarian cancer link is not spot on. From anything I have read about it, I think it's junk, it's garbage. There's no good evidence that it actually shows a link. I would not have any problem using baby powder on my baby girl. We had four children. Well, we have four children, two boys, two girls, and we use cornstarch all the time, and our babies' butts were just as dry as they could be. And I've got a wonderful grandchild. She's 11 months old, and she is, by the way, the most beautiful 11-month-old ever born the entire world of all time.
And, well, that's good. And when I'm pretty sure mine is the most beautiful 3-day old.
I bet. Absolutely. And when we have the joy of having with her and we change her lovely bottom because she is 11 months old, we use baby powder. So I heartily think it's okay. And I think the Johnson & Johnson suit is frivolous. That's what I think.
Hmm.
So enjoy your. How old is your child again? What's your
3 days.
3 days, and your boy is how old?
He's 22 months. So he's just under two.
22 months. Well, we had 3 kids in 3 years, so I can relate to what you're doing. You're almost on zone defense, but 2 kids in that short must be wonderful. Congratulations. That's so sweet.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your feedback.
Oh, thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, telemedicine. This is going to save me some trips to the doc, right?
Yeah, save you some trips. Well, but telemedicine is on the up and rise. I think it's good. I think it's absolutely great. And the issue is for who. But before
What is it?
Instead of going into the doctor, you sit down on your FaceTime. You sit down with FaceTime on your phone or Skype, but you use it in a way and you talk to your doctor. You'll do it through a secure site. Mm-hmm. So you may be just talking on the phone. And you're not actually looking at your doctor and they're not looking at you, or it may be done where you're looking at your doctor. How often have you used FaceTime on your smartphone?
That's a good one.
Isn't it a good one? Well, for those of you who know what FaceTime is and have finally gotten rid of your black and white television and gone to the color tube model, FaceTime or Skype is where you can actually see people and talk to them. Now, the issue with calling your doctor is you could call and talk to your doctor on the phone, and you could send a photo through a secure site. We can do that now through Epic, our electronic medical record. We can store photos on the computer. We don't, in our practice, we don't have ways of sending it, but it's able to be sent securely. And so it might save you a trip for the doctor. And this particular article looked at the fact that at Kaiser Permanente, many of the dermatological problems were handled by dermatologists sitting on the phone, talking to them, and getting a photo sent to them of the rash around their body. So it might save you a trip for the doctor. It's very, very good. Now, here's the problem. The problem is reimbursement.
Yeah.
Reimbursement. Medicare, for instance, does not reimburse you unless it's a face-to-face. So there's no reimbursement. If there's no reimbursement, if I'm taking my time, my energy, I'm looking at it, and I don't get reimbursed, who pays me for my time?
No.
I mean,
no.
It's not free. I should be paid something. Now, within Kaiser, they're in a closed system, and so they collect a fee. You don't go outside of Kaiser. The fees are collected. So they're actually a good place because they can test the efficiency of telemedicine for certain conditions because they basically make more money if they don't have to use the resources of checking somebody in, putting them in the office, putting them in, and so on. Mm-hmm. But a lot of things could be handled by telemedicine. Let me give a perfect example.
No.
You're a diabetic. You're in good control. Well, according to federal guidelines, which I agree with, every 6 months what you should do is have a hemoglobin A1C, a measurement of your diabetes. You should have maybe your blood pressure checked, and we should talk. Let's assume you're a simple diabetic. See if you're following diet and exercise reinforced. Mm-hmm. Well, hemoglobin A1C, you go into the lab, you get your blood drawn. At that time, they could take your blood pressure, right? The technician could take your blood pressure. You then, on telemedicine, we do a telemedicine visit. You're sitting at your office on your lunch hour. You call up your doctor. We arrange it at a time.
Mm-hmm.
We talk on the phone, face-to-face with FaceTime or not, if you want. I look at your blood pressure, your hemoglobin A1C, say you're good to go, refill your meds, and say, bye-bye, see you in 6 months. That's efficient.
Yeah.
That's modern.
You do that?
No. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen because of reimbursement.
Yeah.
In other words, now, I don't have to be reimbursed at the same rate for seeing you in the office because I'm not using the same resources. But I should be reimbursed at some rate so I can do it, and that will motivate me to do it. And then we could make rules of which visits to actually
do
it.
So this may be a growing thing in the future.
It is a growing thing.
Yeah.
It absolutely is a growing thing. And there is telemedicine more and more. It's especially important in rural areas. like Alaska. But it's also important in urban areas where you have to take off for an afternoon and see your doctor and miss work or get your kids for a babysitter. It's ridiculous for many things that do not need face-to-face contact. Mm-hmm. It would also, frankly, solve the doctor-nurse shortage. That occur in many, many areas, rural areas and urban mm-hmm. areas, because you can comfortably do it on the phone with certain appropriate things. Other things it wouldn't be, you would say you have to come in for a visit to look at it. So I'm very pro telemedicine.
Actually, you do it for an hour every week.
At 1-800-462-7413 or do it through Facebook.
Yellowstone, Wyoming listener joins in now. Hi.
Hi, Tom and Dr. Zorba.
How can we help?
I am calling from Yellowstone National Park, where we have bears and the super volcano. But the thing that scares me the most is the dentist.
Right on.
And I can tell you why. By the age of 29, all of my silver fillings that I had done in my teens all were redone with the amalgam white filling. Uh-huh. And then I switched dentists when I moved here about 4 years ago. And the first filling that this dentist did for me had to be redone 4 different times.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I couldn't chew on the side where the filling was. Finally, I ended up going in, and they put a layer of Scotch Bond on the top, and that seemed to solve everything about 6 months after the initial filling, and I went on. Then recently, I had to get 2 more fillings done and redone again, and I still can't chew on that side of my mouth, and it's been probably about 8 months now.
Oh, my goodness.
I am curious if I am an anomaly. Should I go back to the silver fillings, or should I just find a different dentist?
Where was the first dentist? Where'd you come from before you were in Yellowstone?
The first dentists were in South Dakota.
In South Dakota. Yeah, okay. And this dentist, good dentist, bad dentist, new dentist, old dentist, tell me a little bit about the dentist. We have to evaluate the dentist. That's one of the things I would think about.
And that's one of the things I'm struggling with, because I really like the dentist. Mm-hmm. And it's a pleasant experience, mm-hmm. other than the fact that I'm getting numbed and having a filling done. But I really like the dentist, and all of the staff that are there are great.
Okay.
So I feel really comfortable there.
Okay. So they put the new filling in, and what happened? The filling is painful? I mean, obviously there's pain. But what is going on? What did the dentist say is going on with the filling?
That there is originally that maybe a piece of the old filling was mm-hmm. still there, which is why it was redone and then redone again. And then it thought maybe it wasn't sealing properly mm-hmm. Against the actual enamel of my tooth. And so perhaps that was why. So those were sort of the two possibilities that I was given.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to put myself in my place. I'm young. I'm in Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. I love Yellowstone. I'm having trouble with my teeth. I like this dentist, but I can't figure it out because it just doesn't seem to be right. I would get a second opinion. There's no doubt. But the problem is, you know, with medicine, it's easy. I'll say, well, you have to go to a site like this, you know, go to a big city, go to the Mayo Clinic of Dentistry, which, of course, there is no Mayo Clinic of Dentistry. But there are dental schools. I think you have a special problem. And the question is, did you have good dentists? Were the dentists not as good as they could have been? That kind of a thing. And it's extremely difficult to evaluate. And it's quite interesting because with physicians, we're often in groups and you can then trust a group and trust this. And when it comes to dentists, they're individual and it's just harder to see into the practice. And this is not the first time people have brought this up, as a thought. But I think since you can't chew and you have pain on that side of your face, you have to find a time when you can go into a bigger city. How far are you from Bozeman or Billings?
About an hour and a half from Bozeman. That's actually where this dentist is.
So the dentist is in Bozeman. Okay. I would go to another dentist in Bozeman and get another opinion. Do you know people in Bozeman? Do you have doctors in Bozeman? You know, any people in the medical profession at all around there?
I sure do.
That's where I would start. I would start and say, who is a good dentist? Who do you go to? Who do you recommend? I want to get a second opinion. I'm concerned about this. I like the dentist, but for some reason, it's just not working. You need somebody else. Now, dentistry, in many ways, is different than medicine in that it's artistic. And years ago, I don't know if they still do it, to get into dental school, you actually had to do a mold, and you actually had to have the ability to do certain molds 30 years ago, because that was part of dentistry. So that's what I would do. I would get somebody in the medical profession, ask them who to get a second opinion. I would go and get a second opinion, and I would start there. It's very important to go with your gut in certain ways, and then in other ways you pull back and say, what would I do with somebody else? And don't be, even though they're really good and they're wonderful and they're nice people, you need someone else to look at their work and say, what do you think about this? What's wrong with this? Because you're not getting value or satisfaction. I shouldn't say value, satisfaction. Does that help?
That sure does. Thank you so much for the advice.
You're welcome. Yeah,
thank you.
And
appreciate
thanks for calling. I love Yellowstone. It's like unbelievable. I've been there twice.
Artistic is the right word. I've had dental problems, and the dentist, I think, was into modern art.
Was into modern art.
Yes. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Sorba, time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came to us from a listener named Anne. She writes, I just want to disagree with your advice on screening with the prostate. I am a urology nurse. We don't have any other screening for the prostate. If you don't screen at least the digital rectal exam, we will be seeing an increase of bad prostate cancer in the future. Metastatic prostate cancer is not pleasant. We don't necessarily rush into surgery. We are seeing more active surveillance so we can prevent some of the side effects of treatment. It depends on the Gleason score. Just the past couple of weeks, we have had high-grade Gleason on young patients. Thanks. I feel it is important for men to realize this. Before you react, Zorba, what's the Gleason score?
Well, it's a score of how, when you get prostate biopsies, it's a score of how aggressive the cancer is. The higher the score, the more aggressive it is. Federal government has a great service. It's essentially a group of physicians and researchers, and they look at it. It's a task force, and they look at screening tests and whether or not they're of value or not of value. Mm-hmm. Prostate screening was given a D recommendation. Mm-hmm. A D recommendation means it is harmful. It's not a D. Is D for the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force. D is the new F, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, why did they give it a D? They looked at all the data for a couple of reasons. First of all, they looked at the long-term data of what we call the crude death rates. It's true that men are less likely to die of prostate cancer if they're screened, but it's not true that they're likely to live longer. It turns out the death rate is exactly the same. They just die of something else. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, I don't know. In other words, they'd have heart attack and stroke and something else. So then you look at what is the treatment. The treatment for prostate cancer, if it's surgery, is 30% chance that you will have some form of incontinence, either long-term, short-term, or intermittent, and a very large percent of erectile dysfunction. So ED and essentially dribbling are things that are side effects. Mm-hmm. Are they of concern? Sure they are. They interfere with quality of life. Now, if they're saving your life, they're wonderful. You know, because guys want to live longer. This is where I think people have to sit down, if they want to, with their doctor and talk about it and say, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. And I do that with my patients now. I stop screening for prostate cancer, but I bring it up with every patient and I'll say, the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force have given it a flunking grade. If you would like to have a PSA done, I'll do it. Now, then I will do it if they go, yes, my dad died of prostate cancer, I want a PSA test done. PSA doesn't pick up prostate cancer roughly 30% of the time. The PSA test is wrong roughly 30% of the time. It says there's prostate cancer when it isn't. So that's kind of where it fits. Now, the urology nurse sees all the prostate cancer. She sees everything, or he sees everything that's going on in the practice. Everything that's going on in the practice. And so it's very disturbing when someone hears something like that from me. And I apologize for being disturbing.
Yeah. And disagrees with you, but in a way you disagree with
him. Yeah, but I think that's okay. That's, you know, that's sifting and winnowing, which is what we do in Wisconsin, you know, to try to find the truth. This has always been the most controversial test in medicine. I've been saying that for decades. It continues to be that way because we actually don't have a good screening test.
Do you disagree with something Zorba said? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Recipe time coming up. You'll want to be around for that. More of your calls, of course. Our medical myth buster later in the hour, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, Mediterranean Portobello Burgers.
Right, right. Now, I talk about the Mediterranean diet all the time because it is the king of diets. I mean, we know that it's proven, reduces dementia, reduces heart attacks, reduces strokes. It's delicious, it works, and the more we move towards that, the better off we are. And it's not that we have to give up our bratwurst all the time and our steaks and, you know, which a lot of people do. They just sort of go off. And the answer is no. What you want to do is develop some other ways of cooking out. And portobello burgers using portobello mushrooms are really an excellent way to do it.
No, I'm not a big mushroom fan. In the past, with this recipe, I would say, can I substitute hamburger for but I don't eat hamburgers much anymore.
You don't?
No.
So your diet has changed.
It is.
You used to eat hamburgers all the time.
I did.
When was the last time you had a burger?
I'm thinking.
Isn't that interesting?
Maybe a month.
Isn't that interesting? So you don't have burgers like you. So that means your diet has actually changed and it's improved. I mean, you've obviously you're eating something else, right?
Yeah, but not mushrooms.
Yeah, but not mushrooms.
I still don't like mushrooms.
Do you like mushrooms? Do you like mushrooms in omelets?
No.
No? Do you like mushrooms like on steak?
I don't.
So you're not a mushroom person?
No.
Well, if you like mushrooms, and a lot of people do, you know, it's a texture issue with mushrooms.
Yeah.
And I like mushrooms. I grow shiitakes. You know, I plush shiitakes. I have to tell you a story. I grow shiitakes, and I had a guy named Jorge Drexler, and he's a famous artist who got an Academy Award for his song, and he was in Madison, and he came to my house years ago, and I showed him the shiitake mushrooms that I grow in Lux. I went over there, and I said, look at these mushrooms that I grow, and he looked at it, and he said, magic mushrooms? He thought I was growing Amanita muscaris and I'm growing mescaline in my backyard. And I said, no, shiitake mushrooms. And he said, oh, shiitakes, they're delicious.
Let's do the
moving right along.
Yeah, okay.
Portobellas, if you like portobellas, try this.
Right.
It's really good. Okay, start out with a clove of garlic that you're going to mince.
Clove of garlic.
Half a teaspoon of kosher salt.
Half a little tea kosher salt.
2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
4 portobello mushrooms. Remove the caps and the stems and the gills. Kind of make the mushrooms ready to go.
4 portobello mushrooms.
4 large slices of country-style sourdough bread. So a good crusty bread that you like.
Got it. 4 large slices of it.
Okay. 1/2 cup of the following. Slice roasted peppers, bell peppers that you can get in a jar, chopped tomatoes, and crumbled feta cheese, half cup of each.
Half a cup of sliced, jarred, roasted red peppers, chopped tomatoes, crumbled feta cheese.
That's right, that you're going to be using that. A couple of tablespoons of pitted Comenta olives that you're going to, you know, chop up.
Two big tea chopped and pitted. What are those kind of olives?
It's just a different type of. You can use any olive. You could use green. Black won't give you much flavor. Mm-hmm. A Comenta is just another olive that is more robust. Oh. It must, has more umami. Umami is full.
Okay.
A tablespoonful of red wine vinegar.
Big tea, red wine vinegar.
Half teaspoon of dried oregano.
Half a little tea, dried oregano.
2 cups of loosely packed mixed baby salad greens.
2 cups loosely packed mixed baby salad greens.
So there's a lot of prep involved, and I want to talk about that before how to make it. I read a great cookbook. A friend of mine, a dearly departed friend of mine, Nancy, who was a cookbook editor, said she loved this cookbook, one of the best, by a guy named Ruhman, R-U-H-M-A-N, mm-hmm. called Ruhman's 20. These are 20 things. And he divided up his recipes into things like gravy, salt, flour. His first chapter in the book was think. It was the first chapter. In other words, do your mental preparation before you start. And in think is, what do I need to have? So get all this stuff together. Do all your prep first. It's much better. And then you put it all together. Mm-hmm. So preheat the grill to medium high. Mash the garlic and salt on a cutting board with the side of a knife until it's kind of a smooth paste. Then mix 1 tablespoon of olive oil in a small dish. Lightly brush the olive oil over the portobello mushrooms on one side and then on one side of each slice of bread. Now, combine the red peppers, tomato, feta, olives, vinegar, oregano, and the remaining 1 tablespoon of olive oil in a bowl. Mm-hmm. Grill the mushroom caps. Remember, they've been oiled with olive oil until tender. It's about 4 minutes on each side. Grill the bread until crisp. That's about a minute. Okay, once again, you've oiled the bread. Now, here's how you prep it up. Toss the salad greens and red pepper mixture together. Place the grilled mushroom top side down on 4 half slices. Top with the salad mixture with this other delicious stuff in it, and you're ready. Mm. So it's really wonderful. So it takes a bit of work. It's probably, if I were to guesstimate the amount of prep work, it's probably about 15 minutes. And, you know, while you're doing the prep work, you know what you should do? Mm. Listen to public radio.
I'm sorry, I was kind of nodding off.
you know, but for those of you who have not nodded off, don't crash your car. He was sitting in the studio. Do not crash his car. All you do is go to the website, ZorbaPastor.org. Look at this recipe. Photos of Tom, photos of me, ZorbaPastor.org, or through FACEBOOK.
800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with Zorba. A listener now, Zorba in Beloit, Wisconsin. Hi.
Thank you for answering the call.
Sure. How can we help?
I've suffered with, turns out to be pleurisy since February. Was diagnosed after coming back from a business trip where it began.
Mm-hmm.
And from my research and experience with my doctor, it's something I'm going to have to live with. The uh-huh. medication is for relief only, and there's not seemingly a cure for that. And it seems to be quite a number of people suffering with this as I do. And I've tried, I've been on the NSAIDs and tried a course of hormones, I guess it is, or prednisone, and wondering what other avenues I can pursue to get some relief from this.
Mm-hmm. And Zorba, pleurisy is?
Well, pleurisy is when if you have a lung infection, chest infection, your lung slides up and down on the pleura, which is sort of like, you could look at it, it's a glistening membrane, sort of like plastic. And every time you take a deep breath, your lung goes up and down in your chest and slides along the pleura. The pleura is a covering. And when it gets inflamed, it's pleurisy, which is an inflammation from that. So let's go back to it. So you went on a business trip. Did you have a chest infection?
I didn't have one that recently. I did have a kind of a severe cold and sinus infection.
So you're having chest pain when you take a deep breath. What bothers you?
It was on the back side of my lung, mm-hmm. or the front side of my rib cage on the back, just the middle of my back had this pain, mm-hmm. and it was alarming at first. I was hoping I didn't have something really serious.
Sure.
I finally got back to the doctor. Mm-hmm. He took x-rays and diagnosed it as viral pleurisy.
Uh-huh. Did you get a CAT? Have you had a CAT scan?
No, chest x-rays.
Oh, you need a CAT scan. That's what I would do. If you have chest pain, it's not getting better, you need a CAT scan to see what's going on. And most people with pleurisy do not live with it for the rest of their lives at all. In fact, most people with pleurisy, it totally resolves because you have a chest infection, you get rid of the inflammation because of the chest infection is gone and the pleurisy resolves completely. The real question is what's going on and why do you have chest pain?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the question. And you can't answer that without a CT scan. A chest x-ray does not – first of all, a chest x-ray doesn't actually show up pleurisy. It may show up a lung infection. It may show up something going on in your chest, but the pleura doesn't actually light up at all, and the chest x-ray doesn't show anything at all. I mean, it doesn't give you a final evaluation. It may give you some hints as to what's going on, but the CT scan, which is another x-ray, CTs are x-rays, give you a much more exact diagnosis, and an MRI scan is a totally different way of looking at it too. But I don't think if you've got chest pain, when you would turn or twist or when you take a deep breath, is that when do you get your chest pain?
It isn't on breath. It could be just constant at a low grade, but sometimes when I twist or turn or bend, it feels, you know, it's easier to feel it then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't live with this. I think you need a CT scan. I don't think you have a clear diagnosis as to what's going on. It's not clear to me. And a good imaging study is really important. And I think in this case, it might be going getting a second opinion from a pulmonologist who's a specialist in anything to do with the lung and the chest. Pulmonologist would be a good place to start. But you need a CT scan, you need a second opinion, and you need imaging.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. A line open for you now at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener in Springfield, Missouri, is with us now. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I have a situation. About 3 weeks ago, I started noticing small circular patches around my abdomen that since, like, spread to my upper thighs and the inside of my upper arms. It looks exactly like ringworm, and I've gotten an appointment with my doctor, but not before I need to be the maid of honor in a wedding for my cousin in a week. So it's not going away, and it's spreading. I've looked up a lot of information on ringworm, mm-hmm. and there seems to be a ton of at-home ways to handle it. Mm-hmm. Like we've tried lemon balm, tried garlic. Uh-huh.
Have you gone
antifungals on board?
Have you gone to the over-the-counter remedies?
Yes.
Lotrimin. Have you tried that?
No, I've just tried the creams.
Uh-huh. But are they the anti? But Lotrimin is Lotrimin, which is Lotrisone, is a very good antifungal cream that you can try. Have you done that 2 to 3 times a day?
I have used, I think mine's called like Aprazole, and I've done that one twice a day for the past week and a half. And I've added another one, but it's not really effective, and it's still spreading.
You know, it's interesting. This is a good example of telemedicine, where you would actually take a picture, talk to your doctor, and say, hey, it's an emergency. I've got to stand up at a wedding and get rid of this, and what can I do? You know, it sounds fungal. There are a couple of things I'd recommend. Go to the pharmacist and say, this is what I've been taking. Is there anything over-the-counter that is stronger than this? And talk to the pharmacist, because there are a number of over-the-counter creams that you can try. If that fails, I would call up the doc and say, look, I'm going to a wedding. I can't stand this stuff. I have to get it taken care of. I'll come in if I have to, but can you at least give me something that you know is safe that I can try? Help! Help! Help!
Yes.
You're not the ringworm bearer at the wedding, are you?
Oh, gosh. The ringworm bearer at the wedding. Bad pun.
Oh, my gosh.
Bad pun. That's exactly it. But that's what I would do. I would go to the pharmacist, bring everything you in. The folk remedies work a little bit, but frankly, the pharmaceutical remedies are better and they're quicker. And so ask your pharmacist, tell him or her, this is everything that we have and what can I try this more? And then follow it rigidly. If it says twice a day, put it on twice a day. And if that fails after a day or two and doesn't fade, call your doctor. I'd probably do both if it were me. If I were a bridesmaid standing up at the wedding, okay, I've got to put my bridesmaid cap on, or a groom. I'll go to the groom's side, and I wanted to get rid of it. I'd call the doctor and see what they could do, because there are stronger remedies that are also prescription. Do you know your doc? Is this a doc you go to all the time?
No, I've actually actually, this will be the first time I've seen them. I was between providers.
Oh, unlikely that they will give you something if they have never seen you before. That is
right.
Probably close to zero or
that
an imaginary. It's an imaginary number. It's the square root of minus one. So I think it's an imaginary number. So I would go to the pharmacist because it's not the doctor's.
And then I wanted to ask you also, so I'm getting married in a month.
Oh, congratulations.
My partner, thank you very much. Lots of weddings. My partner says that his immune system is very, very strong, and he's not going to get this, and he has not gotten it. And so I'm a nurse. I'm pretty stressed out. I drink a lot of coffee. I'm wondering, is this lingering so long because I have some immune system problems?
No, you do not have an immune system problem. Some people get ringworm and some do not. And is there an immunity issue? Yeah, there's probably a local immunity issue, but it does not mean you have an immune system problem. You are people just, some get it and some don't get it, and it doesn't mean there's anything serious going on.
Okay.
So where are you going to get married?
I'm getting married in Springfield at the Unitarian Church.
Wonderful. How wonderful. Well, congratulations. May you have years and years of wedding bliss, of marriage bliss.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Take care now.
800-462-7413 is our number. Before the break, Zorba, we get many emails and phone calls at Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and we appreciate that very much. But we always love it when listeners take the time to send us an old-fashioned letter in the mail, especially one that is this creative. We recently received the following letter from Jeff and Lynn of Erie, Pennsylvania. Dear Zorba and Tom, we thought we'd send you to a copy of the bingo game we play every time we listen to your show. We have listened to your show for years, but lately it's been even more fun as one of us, Lynn, is in medical school. Thanks for the many years of a great show. Keep it up. Oh, and have fun with the game. Zorba, can you describe the Zorba Pastor on Your Health bingo game they sent us?
Yes, I think I can, Tom. I can describe it. It's bingo. It's going to be on our website, on our Facebook page. It's unbelievable. It looks like a bingo card, you know, with a little star in the middle of it, just like bingo.
Yep.
And then you must listen to the show. There's a tremendous amount of work that has gone into this. I have gotten letters over the decades, but I have never gotten bingo. I've never gotten a game with my name.
The idea is to place something over the...
It's bingo.
Yeah.
So if I do in praise of garlic, you know, the first line for the Z is in praise of garlic, acupuncture, get a second opinion. Tom is grumpy folk remedy. So we've already done get a second opinion. The O, we have already done recommend Prilosec. So with the O, we've already done the R, Mediterranean diet. Concerned mom. We had a concerned mom here with that. So everybody there. And weird theme song, heart healthy recipe, Tom Hapes of food. Well, I kind of already did that.
So before
we even finished with the show, it's bingo. That's exactly what it is.
I don't like the Tom Clark is grumpy reference.
I think it's great. Tom Clark is grumpy.
Am
small
I grumpy
town
ever?
Of Wisconsin.
I don't think so.
We haven't hit poop yet. Poop is on there, so I haven't discussed poop. This is hysterical. You've got to see this. Come to our website, zorbapastor.org. We're going to post this on Facebook. It is the funniest, 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 funniest letter I have ever gotten, and it's a wonderful gift. And I have to say thank you.
I might keep this and play it during our next...
Yeah, and then what do you get? It's bingo. You got to get a prize.
I'll have something prize. You'd like to share with us? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
zorba@wpr.org or Facebook.
Some interesting research coming up. More of your calls, of course, and our medical Mythbuster, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from
PRI, Public Radio International.
Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number is 800-462-7413, but Zorba, before our next call, the FDA is helping us tell what natural food is.
Right. So when you think of natural, what do you think of?
Grains.
Kind of the way Mother Nature made it.
Yeah.
How about genetically modified foods?
Would
that be natural?
Not if I know, Jenny.
No. So part of the issue was these are lawsuits that go on. So Mission Tortilla Chips, that's a company called Mission Tortilla.
Yeah.
I eat their chips every so often. Had a lawsuit because their chips were labeled as all natural, despite being made from genetically modified corn.
Oh, okay.
So, I would think if it's genetically modified corn, it's not all natural. It's GMO corn. Well, there is no definition of natural.
Call my food natural if I'm
There's no definition.
Yeah.
You decide. And there are a whole bunch of lawsuits that go on. And federal judges, regular judges.
This is a natural Twinkie.
Appeal judges. Yeah, natural Twinkie. That's right. What is food? Yeah, Twinkie. Yeah, Twinkie, the most natural of foods. These are natural. Yeah. You can't call it organic because organic has been defined. So, if they use things that are not organic, and by definition of pesticides and whatever goes into organic, but natural has never been defined. So you could conceivably produce a new, more natural Twinkie or a natural Twinkie.
Yeah.
And so the judges have said, come on, FDA, rule in on what is natural. And you know what the FDA said?
We don't know how.
We respectfully decline. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
We respectfully decline. And so this back and forth has been going on because Americans want to have natural foods, cereals, breads, yogurts, beverages. If you say all natural, I kind of make an assumption often it's like organic. And that's what most people think. They think natural means organic. It does not.
Yeah.
Natural does not mean organic in the least. Organic, we have a definition for of what's used to grow the product.
Mm-hmm. So how's the FDA going to do that?
Well, that's a good question. So the FDA has, even though it's respectfully declined over and over and over again, the advisory committee, informal advisory, said, well, it should be nothing artificial or synthetic. Well, you've got to define what artificial and synthetic means. We know a Twinkie is artificial and synthetic. But when it comes to GMO corn, they say, well, we don't have an opinion. And that's where it fits. But I think what's important from a point of view of our listeners.
Yep.
If you see natural on the product, it doesn't mean much. That's what it means. If you see organic on the product, you can go to the FDA site and see what organic is as a definition. But natural simply means they have slapped a word on it to get you to buy the product so that you will think that it's better and healthier for you. And the answer is maybe.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones, Zorba. A listener in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I'm calling because in the last 2 years I started playing pickleball. And I started off by playing just one day a week. And now I'm playing 4 days a week. Well, what happened is my right hand, I'm right-handed, is numb. And it feels like it's always falling asleep, or it is asleep.
Hmm.
It's worse at night, and in the morning when I wake up, it's kind of swollen. I was wondering if there are any exercises or anything I could do to get the feeling back in my hand.
Yeah. What were you playing, did you say?
Pickleball.
Tickleball.
No, pickleball.
Pickleball.
You have to tell Tom what pickleball is.
What is pickleball?
Pickleball is it's played on half of a tennis court with a solid paddle and a wiffle ball, and you usually play in groups of four.
Mm-hmm. It's called pickleball. Now, why is it called pickleball, do you know?
Yes. A man in Seattle who invented the game had a dog named Pickles.
I never knew that. I thought, it's such a strange name. Was it played with a pickle? And the answer is no, obviously. But pickleball has become much more popular, especially among older adults. Yeah. Older adults.
That's true.
Because it's a wiffle ball, it moves slower than a tennis ball. Yeah. You know what a wiffle ball is, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. You may not know about portobello mushrooms, but you know what a wiffle ball is. Well, your hand is none, you know, and it may be from the way you're holding the racket. So I have a few suggestions. First of all, you may want to wrap it when you're actually doing it, and you can get a number of wrist wraps at your local pharmacy, and an ace wrap is a good place to start, but there are other wraps that you can have that are Velcro and that are solid, and they're for tendonitis of the wrist, basically, and for the thumb, because what you want to do is often immobilize the thumb or the wrist when you're doing it. That's number one. I would do that. Number two, I would talk to your local pickleball trainer, i.e., just like a tennis coach trainer, and look at it, because it's probably from the way you're holding the the racket and swinging. And so what you want to do is you want to find out the proper way, because tennis elbow is from a racket too. And I've heard about this with pickleball because people use their wrist more, from what I understand.
So there are pickleball trainers?
We're in the United States of America. Go online, Google pickleball trainer, and you will get it. You might even get a teleconference from a pickleball trainer. But I would also go online, which I've not done, because you bring up a good point of there really are trainers. I would go online and look at YouTube on that, and I would say exercises for your thumb and how to hold a pickleball racket properly, and look on YouTube, seriously, because you're doing something wrong with the racket probably, not absolutely, but probably, and I would look into that. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Those are the three things. So you obviously like it.
Oh, I love it. It's so much fun. If you haven't tried it, you need to.
Oh, really? Now, did you play tennis when you were younger?
Yes.
Oh, I see. They're former tennis players, you know, because
not really. It's for any kind of ball. Like, you can play racquetball or ping
really?
Pong
so
or
all
badminton.
The racket, did you play racquetball and ping pong and badminton?
Yes.
So this is an extension of the things that you've liked going. Are you good?
Probably intermediate. I'm not real bad, but I'm not, you know, the best.
Yeah, but you can hold your own in a pickleball game.
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll find pickle. Maybe Tom and I will do pickleball on a court sometime. We'll have to figure
you
out how to do it.
I really believe
this is not a spectator sport.
Well, thanks very much. And thanks for telling our listeners about pickleball. Yeah. It is gaining popularity, especially among that segment of the population that wants to continue to be active but is on the other side of the hill.
Exactly. And it's a social sport too. There's a lot. We play about 80 people when we play, and when you're waiting to get on the court, we socialize. So it's a great sport.
So it's kind of like a Bonspiel for curling, you know.
Exactly.
I'm just waiting for it to be in the Olympics. It might be in the Olympics one day. You never know.
It might be. It might be.
Because it's gaining in popularity, and I've never seen it. I've got to go look on the web and look at YouTube, so we'll do it. I don't know if I can convince Tom to do it, but maybe I'll play with one of my kids. We'll figure it out. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks.
We appreciate the call.
Pickles.
800-462-7413.
Pickles. So you could do a sport and you could name it after your dog, Cooper. Let's play Cooper, right?
Well, if I could think of a sport of some kind.
Slow walking. That's what he does.
Cooper's good at that.
Slow walking
he is
down.
Good
He's a Basset. Slow walking down the street.
Time again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster segment. Today's email is from a listener named Tom. He writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I'm a 58-year-old male, and I've been starting to snore more than I have in the past. Loud enough that I keep my wife awake at night. My wife thinks that my snoring is a sign of plugged or narrow blood vessels. Is this a myth, or is there some truth to it?"
Oh, it's definitely a myth. There's no doubt about it. A lot of snoring is caused by sleep apnea. And if you have sleep apnea, it's important to diagnose it, because then you need something called a CPAP machine mm-hmm. that basically keeps these apneic events, which are low oxygen events, from happening, because that can be associated with stroke. So when people snore, I get a sleep study. If you're keeping your wife or your husband awake at night because of your snoring, You want to get a sleep study to see if it's that. Now, not all snoring is due to that. A lot of it is due to the back of the throat, the glottis, that just kind of waves in the breathe, mm-hmm. in the breeze when you're doing it. It's due to obesity, the fact that people who are overweight often snore more than people who are not overweight. And there are other things that can occur in the nose, such as allergies. But it is not due to blood vessels that are constricted.
Does sleep apnea tend to occur as one ages?
Yeah, well, it tends to get, when you're age. I haven't heard of sleep apnea like in kids.
No, no.
As you get older and weaker and more frail and overweight. But it does. It tends to get worse. It's more common in people who are older.
Have a possible myth for Zorba? He's happy to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And before we head out, Zorba, let's tackle an email question from Jean in Southwest Missouri. Hello, Zorba and Tom. We live out in the country and have no choice but to coexist with mice. We do our best.
I can relate to that. I live in the country.
We do our best to store our food in mice-proof containers and have an assortment of traps. However, it's impossible to keep everything mice-proof. Last night, a mouse got into a small bag of dried blueberries. So, would you eat the blueberries or pitch them? They were going in muffins and waffles. So my thought is anything potentially harmful left by the mouse would be taken care of through the cooking process, right? are there health risks
Please go
involved
on.
Here?
Go on. That's right. Well, let me tell you something. If I had a mouse that ate through my bag of blueberries, and I'm on the thrifty side, I would take those blueberries and throw them away. I couldn't separate them out. Now, wait a minute. If I were in the woods, I'm camping, I don't have much food around, and I have those blueberries, well, then I separate out the ones the mouse sort of half eaten. I'd probably eat them if I were starving, but short of that, no.
Yeah, ditto for muffins and waffles.
Well, the question is there a health thing? I you're heating them, but you're not boiling them, so I don't know. I find it kind of disgusting. I can't get over the disgust part of mouse saliva on my food while they're eating them. Now, when I said mice, because we, in the wintertime, mice end up, we often find some little mice in our basement, but they do not get into our food, and that's a big issue. This person clearly needs to seal their house and get an exterminator or something, because if the mice are just getting into the food all the time in the country, they've got some holes in their foundation.
Have a question for Zorba? He's always happy to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week,
Zorba. Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0604Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.